call the meeting to order. We do have minutes before us. Representative Kath is looking very alert.
I would like to move the minutes.
Okay. All those in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Minutes are approved. Thanks. We're now going on to the legislative auditor's report. This is a sparkling, new, clean, nice-looking report. Legislative auditor's report on internal control over statewide financial reporting, and then the MMB update on internal control. So we'll start with the legislative auditor.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members. I am Cecile Ferkel. I'm the Deputy Legislative Auditor. And we're here today to talk about a report on internal control over financial reporting. For about the last 6-7 months, all of our financial audit division, all 40 of our auditors, have been focused on auditing the state's financial statements. Those were produced by the Department of Management and Budget in December, at the end of December, and our audit opinion on those financial statements is included there. This may be a document that you're not that familiar with, but I think it can provide you with a lot of useful information. There's financial analysis about the state of the state's finances. There's also a lot of good information in the footnotes. And one of the things that these financial statements do is provide you with a way to look at state operations that's presented in compliance with accounting standards that have been accepted throughout government as being the common way that finances are reported. So when you look at this and then you look at the same document for another state, you're looking apples to apples at the operations. So one of the things that I do want to point out is that, for example, on a basis of accounting that's consistent with government accounting standards, the general funds, I should have put a paperclip here or something. The general fund had a net change in fund balance of negative $1.5 billion. So more than $1.5 billion of resources was used in fiscal year 2009 in excess of the revenue for the general fund. And the fund balance for the general fund at June 30th was a negative $641 million following this basis of accounting. So this report is available online at the Department of Management and Budget's website, and I'm sure they can direct you there if that is something that you want to look at. So one of the outcomes of our audit is the opinion on those financial statements. Another thing that we report on, as we're looking at how the financial statements are prepared, we're looking at the internal controls over that process. How does the state get information from the state's accounting system and from its operations in order to provide financial reports that do comply with generally accepted accounting principles? One of the reports that we provide then is a report on those internal controls. It's the report that you have in front of you here, and it provides kind of a snapshot on the controls over the process of preparing the financial statements. I have Mike Hassing here with me. He's going to kind of walk you through that report.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair, members of the Commission. My name is Michael Hassing. I'm the audit manager from the Legislative Auditor's Office, responsible for the audit at the Department of Management and Budget, and kind of the overall CAFRA coordination for our audit. And as Cecile mentioned, it is a collaborative effort with the entire office and the other audit managers working at various departments and looking at various financial statements, various funds, conclusions, as it all rolls together into the CAFR, which ultimately leads us to this internal control report. Again, the objectives of this report are to look at internal controls over financial reporting. And this is directed to us from our auditing standards, called SAS 115, Communicating Internal Control Related Matters Identified in an Audit. And we are required to report these internal control deficiencies to management and those charged with governance. Now, while this report on internal controls is directed towards an address to the Department of Management and Budget, it does include audit findings and recommendations to the other state agencies that provide information to MMB in that financial reporting process. And all of those agencies did have an opportunity to respond, and those, I think most of them did respond, and their responses are also included in that report directly. The financial reporting process for the state of Minnesota, it's a very complex process. The state of Minnesota is a complex enterprise, and the state's accounting system is not capable directly of producing GAAP-based financial statements. There's a lot of manual calculations, manual adjustments, and adjusting entries that have to be made in order to get to the financial statements. There's data and financial information that's housed outside of the state's accounting system that needs to be incorporated into that. Many of this decentralized environment creates these elements of risk in order to get the information in the financial statements, looking for the internal controls then to support the activity of the financial transactions. And this is a very cooperative effort between MMB and the other state agencies and the Legislative Auditor's Office. As we all know, we operate in a very difficult and challenging economic situation, economic market, and environment right now. There's many complex accounting systems. There's many complex rules and regulations that govern the programs that we audit and that have a direct result on the impact of the results of our report. As we get into the report, this year we have five audit findings related to internal controls over the preparation of the state's financial report. The first finding relates to that the state lacked a comprehensive internal control structure over financial reporting to sufficiently mitigate the risk of potential misstatements in the financial statements. And this is something that we have reported on last year, and I think it really is the foundation of the overall financial reporting process. Internal controls are a system of checks and balances, a system of processes to initiate transactions into that accounting system, to record transactions, to summarize, and then to report the financial data. Internal control structure is critical to financial reporting and to safeguarding state resources. And what we cited in the report is that this overall internal control structure should be that personnel are adequately trained and knowledgeable about financial reporting goals and applicable policies and procedures, that management identifies risks associated with financial reporting and develops policies and procedures to effectively address those identified risks, and that management continuously monitors the effectiveness of the controls, and that management focuses on continual improvement to ensure an acceptable balance between controls and the cost of those controls. Now, MMB has worked on a number of initiatives to work towards resolving this finding, working to ensure that the state does have a comprehensive system of internal control. They have established an internal control and accountability unit. They've established a code of conduct policy. They have an internal control policy. They continue to meet with agencies, and agencies are beginning this process of identifying and discussing their risks associated with financial reporting. So we think that the foundation is in place, but they need to continue to work towards developing this overall comprehensive system of internal control and developing and documenting their risks associated with the financial reporting process. The other findings in the report relate to state agencies continue to allow to have employees to have inappropriate access to statewide business systems and perform incompatible duties without establishing mitigating controls. Again, this has to do with system access. Again, we've seen improvement in this over statewide over the year, but there still continues to be many agencies that allow people to have access to systems that they don't need access for to perform their job duties, or to allow them to have too much control over a particular financial activity. A third finding in the report relates to just some specific controls that resulted in some errors in the process of formulating and producing the financial statements. Finding four was that the Department of Management and Budget did not always prepare accurate footnote disclosures for the financial statements. Again, the footnote disclosures provide additional information to support the financial activity in the overall CAFRA and the basic financial statements that isn't readily available or readily apparent by the numbers themselves. It provides some additional disclosure, and we take responsibility for those as well. And then the fifth finding is that some agencies did not reconcile their subsystem data to the state's accounting system to ensure accurate financial information. And again, it's critical that agencies that produce information that's going to be used for the financial statements on subsystems make sure that what is recorded in their subsystem agrees with what is recorded ultimately in the state's accounting system. And so we feel that these five elements were significant deficiencies in internal controls, that there could be the possibility that a material misstatement in the entity's financial statements would not be prevented or detected or corrected on a timely basis based on those control weaknesses.
We'd be happy to answer any questions you may have.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just out of curiosity, I'm looking through the department's responses, mm-hmm. and I'm looking at the Department of Education, and a lot of them had obviously some of the same findings about inadequate access to records and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. Now, the Department of Education said in their response that the department expects to this finding to be resolved by July 1st, 2010 regarding allowing employees to have inappropriate access to state business systems. And then if you look at some of the other ones, they're saying March 1st. I think Department of Human Services said that finding, they both had the same finding. And the Department of Health will be on March 1st, 2010. Why is there a discrepancy in some of the departments? I mean, being able to block access to people who shouldn't have it, and do you then follow up with them right away when they say March 1st, or if you see something that, or do you ask why does it take the Department of Education till July when the Department of Human Services says they can do it by March 1st? Just out of curiosity.
Madam Chair,
Ms. Merkel.
We don't really go into depth with them about when they're going to resolve. We will be back into these agencies looking at that issue again when we do the financial statement audit starting again next July. So we're going to be back there within, 4 or 5 months. Each agency has a different challenge. They need to look at their processes. They need to see who needs what access. They need to really fully understand what does that access allow the employee to do and what are the incompatibilities, and they have a choice to make. Do they take away the access and eliminate the incompatibility, or do they allow the incompatible access to exist and then design some kind of oversight or monitoring? So they really need to go through pretty much on a case-by-case basis, and these agencies may have varying degrees of the numbers of employees where that incompatibility exists. So it may be a different challenge for different agencies.
Right, and Madam Chair, it's just said that, correct me if I'm wrong, but I understand that, but it would almost, I mean, I guess my point is that if they have until July of next year to fix it, I mean, that's kind of what the Department of Education was saying, I guess, is, yeah, I'll fix it by the next time you do it, where the Department of Education, Department of Education was saying, I'll get to it before the next time you audit us, and the Department of Health is like, no, we're getting to it right away. So, I mean, you don't have a protocol, I guess, in when you deal with these reports as to a time. The answer is no, I guess, is what I'm trying to get
at. Madam Chair, I know, especially, when we get back to do the audits, is when we usually typically review. We don't do an interim kind of reviewing. And I think that might be a question that you could pose to the Department of Management and Budget about what their role will be in doing follow-up. We have sometimes doubted when an agency has said that they can get something resolved quickly, and we feel that it's a more complex problem than that, and we have sometimes doubted that they will be able to achieve that, or that they really fully understand what the recommendation was. And in that case, we would follow up with them.
Okay.
Thank you. I'm just digging straight into the details here. On page 9 of your report, you talk about a Department of Transportation firefighting not resolved. As we perform our oversight role, I guess we can't complain too much if things are partially resolved, because at least it shows progress. But here on this particular finding that it wasn't resolved, and it's been in similar errors in the last five of the last 6 years, I then looked at the agency's response, and it said that they are going to do a better job. I wonder if you could talk more about the history of that and how it could be such a repeat challenge.
Madam Chair, the specific errors tend to be different from year to year, but what we're looking at is, and the reason why we have it as a prior finding not resolved, is that it's the general process of preparing financial information that the Department of Transportation has responsibility over, and whether they make an error in one way 1 year and a different error in a different way the next year, we're seeing enough errors and errors from year to year that we're not satisfied, that they're really taking, I think what they're doing is trying to correct the specific error from the prior year, and they're saying, okay, that's done, but they're not looking at it more holistically and saying, you know, what about our process overall, and if this was an error, what other errors might happen, or what other risks might there be, or where else are we calculating estimates, where else are we pulling information from some other system where there might be a mistake, where else are we doing a calculation. So we're really trying to push them to look more holistically at their process and put some checks and balances in place to make sure that whatever the information is that they need to provide, that they've done it with due diligence and a sufficient oversight to reduce the errors overall.
Chair, I have a follow-up question. Obviously, transportation, education, human services are not our committee's area of jurisdiction. And I guess the question to you is, in your experience, do other legislative committees spend any time looking at your reports and providing the kind of oversight, say, and I guess this could go to Representative Holberg, in transportation, does the Transportation Committee look at this issue? Does the Education Committee look at this issue? Does the Health Committee look at this issue, in your experience, or anybody else, I guess, in the committee?
Madam Chair, it certainly is possible that this report may go under some of those committees' radars because the name of the department is not on the front of it. Mm-hmm. We can make sure that those committees are made aware of some of those departments having issues in the financial reporting process. Certainly other reports, we're soon going to be coming out with a series of reports related to federal compliance. Those will be more at the agency levels, and that might be another opportunity for us to connect the dots between the financial reporting issues and the federal compliance issues.
Madam Chair, my observation would be that, I guess first, that the more serious the continued problem would be, you know, for example, if you have prior findings not resolved, it would be my hope that your office would specifically reach out to the chairs of those committees and inform them of that issue. Certainly, we had enough conversations in the last 18 months with Mr. Nobles on this issue so that this committee took an extended look at the overall issue because of our role at MMB. But the other side of that, of course, is that MMB has the responsibility in the administration of pushing through and making sure that these kinds of findings don't continue to go year after year and have an agency that just doesn't respond to it. So I think it is, the oversight role at our part. You can help other committees in their oversight role, and of course the administration needs to police itself as well.
Representative
Thank you, Madam Chair. To Representative Winkler's question, I can assure you in Representative Hilty's Energy Committee, where we have the Commerce budget, that we actually do address these issues, partly because pretty much every product that's sold on a financial regulation or insurance product runs through that department, and I know that the OLA rarely finds significant trouble in that department, which the irony is that we keep asking, and they're doing well. It's those areas where they're not asking, those departments that are not asking. But I think I have a broader question. I'm kind of looking for what's not in the report. I mean, looking at the agencies that are not listed as troublesome, and there seem to be many, actually. There's just such disturbing news for me still. I mean, that there's some progress being made, but that we have major accounts not being watched after, major transactions without internal controls still. And so I'm wondering, other than a little bit of incremental progress, where else is the good news in this report?
Madam Chair, and Representative, when we do an audit of the state's financial statements, we are focusing on material financial processes. So we're in the big agencies, and that would, of course, then be education and revenue and economic security and the retirement systems. And I think that most of the agencies that we're in actually have some comment in the report. Was there any agency that we're in that, I think that one agency that's done a really good job in internal controls has been the public employees retirement system, and I think that they perhaps are not mentioned in this report. I'm not sure. Anybody?
Not in this report.
Not in this report. So, you know, I think that the agencies that we're in where we're looking at these processes, we do tend to see an issue related to financial reporting. Now, when we do other audits, internal control and compliance audits, we're looking at different things, and those reports would bring up different issues. I think the good news is, and I think it might be an overstatement to say that there are no controls. There certainly are controls in state agencies and in these processes. What our point is that it's not done in a comprehensive, thoughtful kind of way by the management of the department. If I can provide a little history, when we used to do our audits, you know, maybe 5 years ago or longer ago than that, we would go in and we would figure out what the controls are, and we would design the tests of those controls. And one of the things that has really changed since the corporate issues with Enron and WorldCom and then the development of Sarbanes-Oxley is that there has been a recognition that those controls are management's responsibilities, and that management needs to take ownership of those controls, and they're the ones who need to be identifying the risks, they're the ones who need to be designing the controls, and they're the ones who need to understand how they work and whether they're working, and they need to have a way of knowing that. This report is a reflection of that change in the environment, where we now come in and we expect our management of state agencies, and it's actually in state policy too, that expectation is there. It's also in the federal regulations that expectation is there, that managements of these departments have developed a comprehensive approach to their financial responsibilities and have identified the controls that they believe are important in that process, and that they have a way of knowing whether or not those controls are in place and whether or not those controls are effective, and whether or not those controls are responding to changes in their environment. If they change a cycle or a payment process or a program becomes more material or less material, they need to be making changes to their control processes that are in response to the dynamic environment that they work in. So the controls, there are controls there. This is saying that state government, these agencies, MMB, in oversight and guidance, needs to do that in a more comprehensive and more guided and more thoughtful way, and also that they need to document that, they need to control that and oversee that process.
And we talked a lot last session on the importance of the culture of accountability and control. Have you seen a change either within the agencies or overarching at MMB in that culture? Are we making progress on that level?
Madam Chair, I would say that there certainly is more recognition in the agencies that this is their job to do. Last year, when we first really brought this forward, some of the agencies were even saying, why have we changed the rules? And you know, I mean, that kind of surprised us, because it was already in state policy for several years, and it certainly was a part of their responsibility, whether it was in a policy or not. So I think that there has been acceptance that they need to move down this path, and that there have been, to varying degrees, progress made in different agencies.
One question, and this may be more of a question for MMB. Well, let me put it. Do you think that the separate silos of information systems that we have are a problem in this issue?
Madam Chair, certainly the existence of different accounting systems, whether that in and of itself is a good or bad thing, but the fact that you need to pull information from varying systems that may have different processes, different ways of recording things, different coding that's used, it all creates an element of higher risk of error. And, you know, certainly the state does prepare financial statements every year that we do give a clean audit opinion on. So it can be done, even though there are many different accounting systems that provide that information. It really is, if that's the world we're going to live in, there needs to be an element of controls and monitoring to ensure the accuracy of the information.
Again, this may be a question for MMB, so I guess they can repeat it. But what about, will SWIFT address any of these problems and risks with new controls? Are there new controls in place with the SWIFT system?
Madam Chair, that would be a better question for them to answer.
So we'll wait since we're getting to that. Okay, anyone?
I just had a response to Representative Winkler. Actually, today the OLA announced its report on the public defender system, and as part of the public safety committee, we are going to go ahead and look through that. And also, last year, if I may toot my own horn here, when we did the transportation bill for school transportation, that was a direct result of the OLA. So I think these are very, very important. And I'm just agreeing with you that I think there are a lot of committees that go through this. The other one I think we should take a look at is the E-Verify and see with that. What was that? Tuesday? Okay, good. The one question I had, I know you, is there any, and maybe this may be an answer for, I don't know, either you, Madam Chair, or maybe even Representative Winkler, I know you've done a lot on the oversight and transparency stuff. Is there anybody that takes a look at what is required to be on department websites? Just out of curiosity, when the public goes to a website, is there any agency, maybe it's MMB, but is there an agency that requires or reviews what is on the website for people to take a look at? Like, I'm thinking travel policies, I'm thinking different things like that.
Well, Madam Chair, I can speak to one piece of that. Is as you know, that Senator Betzold, in his wisdom, did not think it was appropriate to include my provision last year that required a phone number conspicuously answered by a human being on the front page of the website in statute. So some things that we do mandate in statute that need to be increased, I think, that may be our role as a legislature to say that this stuff needs to be specifically there. I don't know more comprehensively.
The one thing that triggered this is I was looking at doing legislation on transportation policy, specifically prohibiting state travel or state dollars to be used to purchase first-class airplane tickets unless it was an emergency. That was one of my ideas. And when Nonpartisan Research diligently looked for the information, it was very difficult to locate, and you know, there was a little. I just think it should be one of those things that I think our voters and I think our constituents look for are certain things on websites that maybe they want to take a look at, and to not be able to find them, I think does a disservice. And I think that's good, Representative Kalin, that you're doing that, and maybe we should talk to Senator Betzold again and see if we can't get something like that going through, because I think it's important. I think it would be frustrating if you were looking for even a basic, like you said, phone number, but just some information on what we do up here, and we aren't able to find it.
I'll stop talking.
Senator Betzold has a bill, which I guess I'm the chief author on, in the House of a state webmaster, and also I think something is requiring a little bit more transparency and a little bit more information about websites, so we can look at that bill.
Madam Chair, does Mr. Shepherd have urgent information on this? Oh, sorry.
Okay.
he looked eager to participate, which is, you know, he usually waits for us to call him.
I thought we were wrapping up.
Sorry.
Representative Dunn.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just an observation. It feels like we made pretty good progress last year in terms of the staffing levels at MMB and getting a heightened sense of awareness on this. But just to restate some of my comments last year, you know, in the private sector, an auditor can fire a client. A client can fire their auditor if they're, you know, it's just a breach of the relationship here. You don't improve these material weaknesses, and an auditor all of a sudden has risk, and shareholders see it, and they maybe don't buy the stock like they would, and boards of directors come down. So there's all this kind of accountability built into the governance function in the private sector. We don't have that in the public sector. We can't fire the governor Well, I guess we could impeach the governor if we wanted. But I'm just saying, on a day-to-day basis, it seems to me that the legislature is that accountability mechanism, and the individual committees in this committee really need to take seriously the recommendations that come from the OLA and really push hard in committees like this for accountability and turn up the heat. And I had a proposal to increase the LAC's more kind of concrete and defined oversight role there, and you know that didn't make it into law. But I think it's something we should keep thinking about and continue trying to heighten the awareness of across the oversight committees here in the legislature. So with that as a statement, just one quick question. So we did beef up the staffing, and I don't know how long it took at MMB on their internal audit function. Did you see evidence of that function starting to mature and have some impact here, or were you so focused just on the audit particulars that you didn't really observe that? I'm curious if you saw any evidence of it coming to fruition.
Yeah. Madam Chair, Representative, we really didn't see much impact yet. It did take a while to staff the unit. I think some of the people in the unit perhaps are even within a couple of months of having started. We do expect or anticipate that over the coming year we will see more involvement and more interaction. Kind of a interesting thing that we did see was that as that unit was funded and then starting to be created, we saw agencies who had been taking initial steps of their own kind of pull back from that and say that they were going to then wait and see to make sure that whatever they did was going to fit into the bigger picture. And that was kind of discouraging to us. And I told agencies when I met with them that there's nothing that is going to happen at MMB that's going to change the risks that they have in their environments for their particular systems or really provide them with a control structure that they don't still need to be significant involved in. So I told them that they still should move ahead with looking at their processes, identifying their risks, and identifying the controls that they have and where they may need to develop, and where they may have some gaps in that process.
Just a quick follow-up then. Did you write that up? Was that part of the findings? And I'm sorry, I obviously didn't read this word for word, but I didn't see anything that was kind of like a management letter comment that would say, listen, don't take your foot off the gas in the individual departments just because MMB now has this new function. That seems like an awfully important observation that is important for us to hear about.
Yeah, Madam Chair, our recommendation still is that they need to, that not just MMB, but MMB and the state agencies need to continue to develop. We also did cite, it's on page 4 in the paragraph that's in the middle, just saying that some agencies delayed their independent efforts to document their controls awaiting centralized guidance from the Department of Management and Budget's Internal Control Unit. And I wish they hadn't done that. I wish they had continued to address their own particular unique concerns.
So one follow-up comment. In your next round of auditing, even calling that out more strongly, if you see it as continuing through another audit cycle, that would be a pretty dangerous development. Thank you.
Okay. Anything else? Okay. This looks like a really good report to read today. Since the date on it is February the 11th, we're all excused from having committed it to memory at this point. But okay, any other questions or comments? Okay, now we get to MMB's update on internal control.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair.
We thought we'd make a comment before you started. We noted in the very extended debate on the House floor yesterday that a very prominent member of the legislature and very careful member of the legislature kept getting the name of your department wrong. It doesn't seem to be an easily remembered name, and so maybe we look at another change in it this session.
Madam Chair, that's an excellent idea. We'd love to revisit that conversation.
Madam Chair, I'd like to limit it to one change a year, and since MAPS went to SWIFT, I think they're done.
We got.
Madam Chair, that's an even better suggestion. Madam Chair, okay. Stephanie Andrews, currently with the Department of Management and Budget, Minnesota Management and Budget. thank you for having us here today.
Well, you didn't even get it right. Sorry, we don't mean to throw you before you start.
I'll try to recover, Madam Chair. We are here today to talk to you about two different things. One, Lori Mower, Assistant Commissioner for Accounting Services, is here to talk with you directly about the audit that you just heard about from Ms. Berkland, Mr. Hassing. And so we want to just visit a couple of items in that report and answer any questions you have. And then to go to the conversation that you were just having in a little more detail, I want to introduce you to the head of the Internal Control Unit and have, I know that some of you have met her, but I'd like you to be able to hear from Ms. Janine Couric herself about what that unit is doing, what they've been up to, and also obviously provide her with some feedback on where they're going to date. So I just want to start off by saying how much we appreciate the conversation and the feedback from the legislative auditor. As Ms. Ferkel talked about, the collaboration that we have with the auditors throughout the financial reporting process is a really key part of making sure that we're doing our work as well as we can, and also in helping us think about how we work with our agencies going forward. And so I just want to note that that's an important collaborative process, and we appreciate the feedback in the report. I'm going to turn it over to Ms. Moe now to talk through the audit itself.
Okay. Ms. Moe?
Madam Chair, members, thank you. My name is Lori Moe, Minnesota Management and Budget. I'm going to go through the recommendations made by the auditors in the report you just heard about and discuss briefly the plans we have at MMB for addressing those. The first finding related to continuing to develop a comprehensive internal control structure for financial reporting. First of all, we appreciate the auditor's recognition of the progress that's been made to date, including the creation of that internal control unit that Ms. Andrews mentioned and that was created thanks to the support that we got in this committee last year. Also, the statewide implementation of the code of conduct, which you'll be hearing about in a little more detail in the next presentation, and also recognition for those agencies that have taken and made successful efforts to put a strong internal control structure in place. Additional work has been done since the end of the fiscal year, both at MMB and at other agencies. And while we certainly recognize that we're not finished and we need to do additional work to develop and document our comprehensive internal control structure, we will be providing additional information for agencies, and we'll be providing training scheduled this spring, including training on risk assessments and on internal controls. In the area of system access and situations where agencies have allowed inappropriate access to the state's business systems, we again appreciate that some progress has been made. We took a number of steps in this last year to improve that situation, including strengthening our process for an annual certification process by all of the agencies with MAPS users. We also developed a new report for them to help them better identify incompatible access, and we required a new certification process to certify that mitigating controls were in place when agencies are not able to completely eliminate incompatible access. Those changes and the agency efforts resulted in more than a 50% reduction in the instances of incompatible access, but clearly there remains a number of users that is higher than it, with incompatible access that's higher than it should be. So we will continue to work with those agencies to reduce that, and also provide more instruction on adequate mitigating controls and monitoring processes where that's necessary. In the longer term, and this goes partially to one of the questions that was raised earlier, the SWIFT implementation will provide some improved capability to make additional improvements in access limitations. The security rules in the SWIFT system will provide for more detailed roles, and so we'll be able to develop security rules that are more limiting. That's been somewhat of a problem for us in the past. There's also some online workflow functionality that will provide for automated routing of approvals for some transaction types. And we will also have the ability to put access in an inactive status for those employees that only have infrequent need to use the system because they're a backup, for example, if someone is out ill. In addition to that, the new system will have some improvements for financial reporting generally. It will not address totally the fact that we have multiple systems that contribute information for financial reporting, but it will mean the elimination of a separate system that we currently use to compile the financial statements and will instead capture that adjusting information in the core system. In addition to eliminating potential errors in the translation between systems, it will also provide that data in a more visible way for agencies so that as they have opportunities to review and correct information, it will be right in the system where we're doing our reporting from. On the third finding regarding the financial statements, as Mr. Hassing indicated, this is a complex process with many, many, many adjustments, and the work is produced on tight timelines. And every year there are changes to generally accepted accounting principles that need to be implemented, as well as changes to the reporting entity. So while we do have an extensive process for supervisory review and analytical work in place already, we appreciate the auditor's comments for areas where we can strengthen that process, and we'll use them to continue to make improvements in our processes. Additionally, rather than focus...
Excuse me, Representative Lynch.
Thank you. Do you mind if I interrupt you quickly? I want to go back to the same question I had. This is under finding three on the Department of Transportation, which unfortunately is going to be the example of the agency that continues, it seems, to have problems and not make progress or enough progress to resolve the findings. Can you remind me again of how you intercede and on an administrative level? I mean, I can... Just to be fair, I think this goes to Representative Bigham's point. Many times legislative committees care more about the OLA program evaluations than in the financial audits, which is unfortunate, I think. But what in – and that's something that we need to do a better job of – but what does the administration do to enforce more effective improvements from agencies when they continue to fall behind?
Madam Chair, Representative Winkler, to use the DOT example, we do considerable work every year with them in providing instructions on what information we need from them to complete the financial reporting process. We have, in recent years, worked with them through a number of the infrastructure issues that the auditor mentioned. And as Ms. Burkle indicated, while they've had issues a number of years running in some infrastructure areas, they have responded to those issues, and they have made considerable progress on the specific issues, but then we've seen maybe a new issue the next year. And so I think that the auditor's point was that more comprehensive look at the overall picture still has room for improvement.
Madam Chair, remember when we had Minsky come in and talk about their audit process last session, they made the specific point that the Chancellor of Minsky made unresolved prior findings in a important point of the annual review process that they went through with college presidents. And I guess the question I have is internally, do these kinds of findings that are unresolved rise to the level of commissioner to governor or commissioner to finance, MMB commissioner conversations, or is that something that, or maybe you don't have annual reviews, I don't know.
Madam Chair, Representative Winkler, not specifically about this finding because we haven't had it for very long. I think we'll continue that conversation.
My question was more general.
Right forward, more generally. We actually do have meetings with the commissioners when we have audit reports. And so when in the past, when the agency audit comes out, we take a look. If we think that it's serious, we have had meetings with the commissioners of human services. I can remember that we all got together to talk about what their follow-up plans were. So that we want to be sure, and again, help, you know, going back to our conversation from last session, want to be sure that the commissioners are aware that that's something that they need to look seriously at. I think when, as we talk about our internal controls work, too, you'll hear, too, about some more staff-level follow-up that we'll be doing that we weren't as much able to do. But certainly, I would say in the last year, we have had more conversations than we've ever had before, commissioner to commissioner, about what the findings are and what the agency's plans are to remediate the issues that are found there.
And Madam Chair, I want to be more explicit on the we. Who is it that is doing the conversations with the commissioners in these specific agencies? Is it the commissioner of MMB? Is it the chief of staff? Is it the governor? Who is having is doing this?
Madam Chair, Representative Winkler, in the instances I was talking about, that's been Commissioner Hansen, along with Ms. Moe, myself, and others who may have specific information about the specific audit finding that we're talking about.
Madam Chair, my only editorial comment is hopefully in future years this rises to a higher level than the Department of the Commissioner of Management and Budget, and actually rises to the governor's office level when it comes to reviewing these kind of findings, because I think this issue of setting the right tone at the top and having the right culture for internal controls is important, and I hope it is on the radar screen of the next chief executive.
Madam Chair, Representative Winkler, I'd like to just add, because I should say there's certainly, if you go back to last January, we had some financial forums for all of the executive branch, which did include comments from the chief of staff, and we've continued as we go through that process to also check in with them about what we see as what's going well and what isn't going well. So I wouldn't say that they're not part of that discussion. They haven't been part specifically of those meetings with commissioners, but I take your point.
And of course, we've noted that all of the gubernatorial candidates have made this a really high priority.
Sometimes somebody's got to run the state, though, Mr. Chair.
Okay. Representative Kiffmeyer.
Thank you very much, for, Madam Chair. A question I have for this, just knowing how, I mean, the governor and a lot of agencies, there's a lot of things, this, and Minsky as well. But I would suppose that Commissioner Hansen just probably did discuss some of these things with governor. I mean, that would seem a logical thing. Maybe you have no personal knowledge of that, but that seems it would be reasonable.
Madam Chair, Representative Kiffmeyer, I don't have personal knowledge of that, but I certainly know that the general management of the agencies is often a topic of conversation between the two of them.
Thank you.
Anyone else?
Okay. Madam Chair, the fourth finding relates to the third one on financial statements, but deals with exclusively with the notes to the financial statements. And the one additional comment I'll make is that rather, while we recognize that we have some improvements that can be made in the financial reporting generation, we also believe that we can improve the process by looking further upstream, and that we can reap some benefits from investments in additional agency training during the off season, rather than just adding tasks during the very busy financial reporting season. And so this spring we have a series of training classes planned on accounting principles and financial reporting, as well as internal controls and risk assessments. And we'll be inviting agency staff with financial reporting responsibility across the state agencies, and have 7 different half-day sessions scheduled on various subjects. The final finding in the report relates to agency subsystem reconciliations. Like with the other reports, their individual responses are included in the report, and we will be working with these agencies on this issue, as well as the others, to monitor their progress to resolve them. And that concludes my remarks. If there's no further questions, I can turn it over to Ms. Andrews for the internal control unit discussion.
Okay, any other questions?
I have more of an overarching question that I hope that Ms. Moe or Ms. Andrews will address, or I don't know if Ms. Frickle. Oh yes, you're still here. I'm hoping that by the end of today, or within a few weeks, that this question does get answered. About, I think it's something that Representative Downey brought up as well. This question is: are the challenges that can be resolved structurally, or are they challenges of leadership that have been missing, and sort of that level of accountability? And so I want to know, is it the electoral process that's going to resolve some of this, or is it the purview of this committee to do more structural changes that can empower? Sounds like MMB is well empowered to have that layer of accountability, and that it may be something different that the state needs, but I'm just wondering if anybody can answer that for this committee, to if there are structural things that we need to do beyond what we've done last year and elsewhere. And then one just technical question to this point. I don't know, have there been any executive orders issued related to resolving outstanding items from OLA reports or other internal controls pieces that we've seen that go to this sort of structural question?
Madam Chair, Representative Kalin, there have not been any executive orders issued. I think that the governor's inclusion of the internal control initiative in his budget and your enactment of that, along with the language in 16A, I think it's 0.057, really provide the structure that's necessary. And so I think as we go forward with the internal controls unit, I think the structure is there to provide the overarching framework that agencies need. As Ms. Ferkel recognized, and as we continue to talk with them about too, and agencies, it's a balance. And so it continues to be where we can provide the framework, and agencies need to move forward on their specific risk assessment, along with specific management leadership that in some agencies is very strong, and in some agencies need some help to look at, again, in a structured way, what their controls need to be. So I think it's a balance.
And just one more comment, Madam Chair. I appreciate that, and I from the conversation.
We should. That last sentence was the most diplomatic way I've ever heard anybody say some are really good and some are really bad.
Exactly. I was going to make that comment generally about how to. We I don't think we should mandate that there should be a commissioner or a deputy must have in every agency must have management experience or capacity. I don't think that that's the governor's decision about who to offer, and it's the Senate's decision about whether to confirm. But I just think that from the conversations that we've had, I believe that you are trying to do the same work that we're doing, that we're partners in this, trying to resolve this issue. I just think we need to continue to ask whether OLA report and outstanding items get the attention of the governor and the governor's office as much as a front page story in the Pioneer Press or Star Tribune. We want the legislative auditor reports to be what gets the attention, not the media piece. And so we need to keep fishing for anything that we need to do to help assist this governor over the last year and prepare for the next governor.
Representative Kipon.
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. And I think you're exactly right. I think we are a partnership here. And actually, when I read through some of these things and realizing that we had this discussion not even a year ago, and there's some tremendous strides having been made here, and I sense a tone of seriousness in doing some of these things and significant efforts, the Office of Internal Control, some of those things that were there before and do that. One thing, though, I do have a concern about. It, when I read something on page 22 of the report and the response from the department, this has to do with footnote disclosures, and this is always a challenge, I think, when you're releasing preliminary drafts of the footnote disclosures before their entire review process is complete. That's often the case. The auditors come in, you're running the ship and things are going on. And when I read through some of this, it seems like they really did I think that they were maybe a categorical statement was made that maybe was a little bit harsh on them in that regard, because it seems like their explanation was pretty fair. I think I want to be sure that we take all of these things very seriously, but if someone does have a well-documented situation where they've had a finding, but there's a quite reasonable explanation in it, we ought to consider that as well. And so we really stay heavily focused on the majors of the, in this case, is process. But I think none of us expected that all this stuff would just be all cleared up when they came back this next year. This is huge. But I would expect to see that this year, the greater fullness of the impact of all that, and that we would see ongoing. And I do share your concern. One of the issues we had was before was there are some that do really well and some don't. And the question I might have here is, for those that maybe aren't as strong, how are you dealing with those that aren't quite as strong? Because that's really the substantial concern, not those who are already kind of doing well and need to do better, but those that came into us last year and had some significant weaknesses. So how are you focusing your labors and your efforts upon those of the greatest need and that have the most demonstrated weaknesses?
Madam Chair, Representative Kiffmeyer, it's a great question, and it's what we're continuing to look at as we put the internal control unit structure into place, because you have to do a couple of things. You have to provide the overall framework with some with some basics that everybody needs to think about. You also have to recognize, though, that even those agencies that are in a strong position now, turnover, changes in responsibilities, all of those things can fairly quickly sometimes change the environment that an agency operates in, both for the good or for the bad. And so it's both providing that overall structure and then also getting into some specifics that the internal control unit, for example, down the road will be able to identify. You know, here's an agency that has a turnover in their chief financial officer. How do we make sure that they have the information they need to go forward? And we'll be looking at those kind of things. And so I think as we perhaps go through the overview of the internal control unit, you may hear some answers to those questions about what we plan to do.
Okay. Thank you.
Madam Chair, if I can bring down Janine Kluwick now, who's our Director of Internal Control and Accountability, would like to introduce her to you. While we're getting set up here, I'll first of all, we're going to be working from the slides that I think you have in your packets. So we want to give you an overview of the initiative, the internal control work that we've been doing and our progress to date. Janine has been with us in our agency for several years, took over this position in August, but also needed to finish up her work as the Director of Financial Reporting. And so we had a little bit of a issue where in identifying the best person, it was clearly someone like Janine, but she had some work to finish up, and so had to do a little bit of a hopscotching to get her in place. Janine, Ms. Kuwa comes to the job with several decades of experience at the Legislative Auditor's Office, and so some of you may know her from her experience there. She also, though, when she started at what was then the Department of Finance in 2006, she was able, with a couple years of experience on the financial reporting side, able to get some agency experience that in this current position really provides her with a unique perspective on both what the auditors are interested in and their perspective, and also what an agency can reasonably do and the help that they need. And so we felt really lucky that Janine was willing to take on this not inconsiderable responsibility and to move into that position. We are going to walk through again where we are to date. As you all well know, last session we had a lot of conversation around internal control and internal auditing, and thank you very much for your support in moving this initiative on through. Our emphasis in that discussion was on training agencies and proactively identifying and resolving problems on the financial management side. And the initiative that we ended up having enacted included funding to hire 6 staff in the internal control and accountability unit that Janine now heads up, along with another 2 staff in our treasury division. This is the division headed by Assistant Commissioner Kathy Cardell, who you've heard talk about on a range of issues this session. And I'll talk about Ms. Cardell's staffing at the very end of this presentation. But we have 6 staff in that unit, and I think Ms. Kuwick is now going to walk you through some of the basics of the internal control initiative as we see it.
Madam Chair, members of the committee,
yes.
I really appreciate the opportunity to come before you. I could probably tell you unequivocally that I love internal control, and there's probably not very many of us in the world. You can't be an auditor for 20-some years with the Legislative Auditor's Office and not have a passion for this.
Madam Chair?
While we have this slide in front of us, I guess I have one question.
Uh-huh.
We noted that this pyramid has a flat top.
I know, and I'm not sure what happened with that, Madam Chair.
Well, we looked at our dollar bill appropriate for when you used to be finance, and we noticed that there's an eye on top of that flat top, and wondered if you were saving space to put the eye up there.
That very well could be. That's a very good suggestion, Madam Chair.
Madam Chair, given the testifier's professed love for internal controls, I think it's appropriate that I let her know that it is Mental Illness Awareness Day.
Thank you. Well noted. Madam Chair, my husband, who's a materials engineer, his eyes just start to roll back, so I can understand that. You know, we've talked a lot about internal control, and I know all of you have some awareness more than probably John Q. Citizen, but I thought it's really important to just kind of spend a couple of minutes to put sort of a framework around what it is that we're talking about here. And internal control is the entire process that an agency or the state puts into place to make sure that they achieve their objectives. And in the most lay terms, that means internal controls are what you put into place to make sure what you want to happen actually does happen, and what you don't want to happen doesn't happen. And so that's kind of a quick and easy discussion. There is a kind of a uniform body of knowledge and a framework that was developed in the 90s after a terrible foreign corrupt scandal in the 90s, and that framework is still really the framework that we talk about internal control today. And it's important to have a framework because it really gives us a basis of discussing management and auditors discussing internal controls kind of on the same basis. So oftentimes you will see these 5 interrelated components from the framework for internal control as this thing, this pyramid, and I truly don't know what happened to the top of my pyramid. So, and you will see there's 5 interrelated components. You'll see at the bottom of this pyramid, there's control environment, that's kind of a fundamental foundational piece. There's risk assessment, and a lot of what the auditors have been talking about today have to do with risk assessment and control activities. That's been really the focus of the audit report. There's monitoring up at the top, and then you see this information and communication side touching all 4 of the other components and running up and down the sides. So far our unit, you know, I've been there 5 months. My most senior member of my staff has been there 3 months. My most recent hire, they're up here, he started today. he doesn't know what he's getting into now. He has a fair appreciation.
Be nice, everybody.
You know, several of us have audit experience, and I think even though we're not an internal audit function, you need to kind of think like an auditor to be able to solve some of these issues. But most of our effort so far has been in the control environment section, and that's really the culture of the organization. It's the integrity and the ethical values of the organization, and it really has to do with how employees think about their jobs, think about controls, think about the accuracy of their work and how they carry that out. And that's a real fundamental piece. You have to start there, or the rest of it, as you can see from the pyramid, doesn't make a lot of sense. So we have really looked a lot at control environment in the few months that I've been there, and really to reach out to the people, both in terms of training and in terms of this awareness of their responsibilities. So the new legislation really gave us quite a few responsibilities, and you can see some of them there. Adopting policies, assisting agencies, monitoring OLA reports. But you have to remember, as Ms. Ferkel said, the legislation also clearly states that the responsibility for implementing, maintaining, monitoring the internal control system is in the hands of each agency head, and it is primarily their responsibility. Now, we talk about controls fairly philosophically, and I think some of the problems that we've had with agencies so far is really trying to take that kind of theoretical discussion and move it into a realm where they can actually act on things. We've worked on a lot of these responsibilities already in our short time, and how we are different from auditors is that, again, auditors need to maintain their independence. They can give the findings, the recommendations. They can see from an idealistic viewpoint what needs to be done, but they really don't have the ability to really work very closely with agencies on solutions. So we are really looking to pull up to the table, to partner with agencies, and to really work through internal control issues as they come to be, whether they're issues that have come out of OLA reports or also hopefully increasingly issues that they identify themselves before the auditors hit the scene and know that they need help to resolve. And probably a good example of this is ERA. I think you had quite a bit of time working on some or hearing about some ERA stuff recently. And I guess a good example of our role would be our work in ERA. As you know, the Legislative Auditor's Office will not really be doing their formal audit work on ERA money until probably the fall of 2010, whereas now we are already actively looking at ERA, and we're partnering with the ERA coordinators to resolve issues as they come up and to really ensure that there's adequate documentation of controls for when the auditors come in. So we play a little different role than what the auditors would play. One of our key initiatives so far has been the Code of Conduct. Again, when you think about that foundational piece, that control environment, Code of Conduct is right front and center. It's how people's responsibilities to act ethically and to bring up issues when they encounter them. And again, this Code of Conduct was modeled after the Sarbanes-Oxley Act, SOX, which was a federal initiative based on all of these terrible occurrences and the outrage for a lot of publicly traded companies that had problems. So we really thought this was a good idea for the state, and so we really pushed for rapid implementation of the state code of conduct. It relates to or applies to agency heads and employees with accounting, auditing, financial reporting, or tax filing duties. And the implementation was to be completed by December 31st. We had thousands of employees who took part in this effort, and we're currently conducting a follow-up survey to make sure that the implementation has been completed and to find out whether other remaining issues are out there regarding the code that need to be addressed. We also have done a lot of other training and assistance. One of the things, as we already talked about, was the American Recovery and Reinvestment Act, the ERA. So far, we've reviewed and commented on the quarterly 1512 reports, and we plan to work extensively with agencies this spring to assist them in assessing and documenting ERA-related internal controls, which not only are mandated by the state, but also there's a high expectation from the federal government that these ERA funds will be very strongly controlled. Another mandate in this legislation is the OLA follow-up. We're going to be resuming formal audit follow-up. We're going to be monitoring resolution. We'll be bringing issues forward to M&B management if we feel that they need to get involved in this. We really need to emphasize to agencies, keep it on their radar screen, emphasize to them that it is really important that they resolve these things in a timely way. and help assist them or consult with them if they're confused about what steps they might be able to take to resolve these issues and to really try to avoid those repeat findings. We're also going to create a database of audit report findings so that we can look at common trends, and we can say, you know, a lot of agencies are getting written up on the same issue. Is this a training problem, or do we need to maybe issue some different statewide policies that would help to resolve some people's confusions or the issues? Another of our early training efforts is the monthly internal control bulletin. Some of you may have seen these. I realize you can't read it, but I think I did provide one in your packet. And this was kind of a timely issue. This was January's issue on information system access, a good companion to the audit finding that the OLA did on continued problems. We try to talk about, yes, here's the rule, but this is why limiting this access is so important. So these are one page on a selected topic. We want to educate agencies, and we want to make sure that these agencies maintain this control consciousness throughout. And all of those control bulletins are on the MMB website. And I think people are reading them, because I do get lots of questions and follow-up from agency folks once they are issued.
And finally, Madam Chair, we'd like to just give you a quick update on the two staff that are on the Treasury side of Minnesota Management and Budget. One of the first things that we did in that area, knowing that one of the some of this responds to an OLA report that looked at capital project issues, and one of the things we wanted to do before we got started, and so we held off a little bit on bringing staff on so that we could do a contract with a private firm to look at post-issuance compliance review. And so we really wanted to start out by saying, so what are the key issues? Where are we needing to focus our efforts? And they're working on that audit right now. The firm, they're looking, this in some sense responds also to a national or a federal interest, more interest by the IRS on looking at post-issuance auditing. And so again, we're trying to make sure that we can get a look, jump on some of those issues. There have been some specific projects chosen by the IRS for deeper review. We haven't been one of those, but we're trying to learn as much as we can from what they're looking at. Basically, what we know on the Minnesota issuance practices is that we are have a pretty strong issuance process on the front end. So when a capital budget is passed and general obligation bonds are sold, we have a pretty strong process for working, especially where there are public-private partnerships and with state agencies, and setting up the appropriate legal requirements and agreements. But once those projects have moved on out the door, there's been little review for ever. And so we want to make sure that we're able to start emphasizing with agencies and with, again, the folks that are receiving those funds on what they need to do to make sure we're, in one sense, protecting our tax-exempt nature of our bonds. And so that's part of the real impetus for looking for doing this audit. Once we have two people who have both been hired and will be starting in the one this week and one, I think, the next week. They're going to be then taking the results of this, the bond logistics audit that's in place right now, and moving forward to look at post-issuance practices and providing support. I'm also looking at some more general capital project oversight responsibilities. And so that's what's happening on the Treasury side of Minnesota Management and Budget. That concludes our presentation, but we'd be happy, obviously, to answer questions if there are more.
Any questions? Okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members.
Obviously, be back to you. Okay, being adjourned.